Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
And the truth that is rooted within me.
So, Michael, are you there?
I am. How are you, young lady?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
I'm blessed and highly favored. Welcome.
Welcome to you. So here you go.
Welcome.
Another
to
day
my
with the Forgiveness Factor.
Here we are. And do we have any callers? David?
Well, I think we have David here and Tim here.
Awesome. Good morning, gentlemen. Good afternoon, if that's where you are, wherever you happen to be.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, welcome to day 32 of our celebration of Memorial Day, the invitation for each and every person to continue that celebration and honoring those who've had to go through the trauma of war by facing and dealing with at least one issue in your life where your mind serves up some form of hostility and fear and takes you out of the state of love. And here we are. Inviting everyone to make that a commitment on a daily basis to clean up at least one thing that will change what's going on the planet around this whole idea of war and violence and the lack and the loss of human life. And I don't mean now on a physical level as war happens that people lose their lives physically, but that you know, if you hold a newborn child, you know exactly what human life is. And those who are not functioning as that human life have lost their human lives. And so what we're looking to do is to create a space of support for every mind, heart, and being on the planet to learn to live as we were designed to live, as love. And so are there any questions, any thoughts in the chat room or any other callers? David, do you have anything in mind today? Terry, or pardon me, Tim.
Well, I've just been continuing to work since we were talking yesterday and did an hour-long breath session and another half-hour session and gotten just lots of different little pieces floating up and insights about what all of the emotion and discomfort was about. And I'm probably not done, but I've been doing more work on it. And walking much straighter and much less discomfort, so I'm very pleased about that. And I thank you again for your support yesterday.
You've got it. And yeah, I wonder if Sam is with us?
I don't see Sam. If Sam's there, push the number one.
And is that Carol we're talking to?
That's Carol.
It is Carol. Yeah,
Carol, I don't see the chat room as being up yet.
It's up.
Okay, it's not registering on my computer. I have refreshed a number of times.
You may want to, it's just going to be refresh it because I have it up and it's open.
Yeah.
And
I've been refreshing, so it's I wouldn't doubt if other people are having the same problem.
Okay, so, let me close. I'll close it and I'll refresh it. See if that works.
Okay. Technology, what fun.
Yeah.
Okay, there it is.
I was wondering why there was nobody in there with me. I was all by myself.
Yep, it just came up.
Oh, there you go, Tim. I see you now. Okay.
Yeah, because I've been on since about 5 minutes still, and I couldn't get the chat room.
Uh-huh.
So
I don't
see Sam yet, but I thought I would just mention that one of the key pieces that came up after the breath session was I just came to be very aware that 7 or 8 years ago when my hip did the same thing, the emotion that was tied in it was fear. And at that time it was a fear of failure, of not being able to make enough money to pay for everything the family needed. And this time last Friday when I got this call from this patient from way back in 1989, the fear that came up was, that bubbled to the surface through the breath session, was fear that I hadn't done enough to help her back then and fear that I wouldn't be able to do enough to help her now, since she's having the same issues but at a much deeper level come up. So so that was very, very enlightening, and it helped make a lot of sense of what was going on. And so it's been a lot better. And the breath work helped immensely, and the exercise yesterday helped immensely, and I thank you very much.
Delighted. Awesomely delighted to be on the team.
I ended up writing her a note about how she, her question was, why is this happening again after all these years? Why did it come flooding back to her after 7 or 8 years of having a really good set of experiences and getting married and working at a stable job? And so I detailed for her something you might talk about, but something you talk about in one of your, several of your talks really, and that's the vitality meter and the idea that when I'm doing my work, my mind will show me only those things that I have the vitality to handle. And there's probably two factors going on, that her vitality has increased and she's stabilized over the past 6 or 7 years, and somewhere there was a trigger in her family or her life that is pointing her toward the same issues at a much deeper level than she was able to look at before. So,
right.
And that was very helpful for her.
Awesome. Has she started on worksheets yet?
She's right now at the level of learning the EFT tapping, and she's got the chapter downloaded, and she's got the worksheets, and we just set up a phone call to do some more talking after. She wants a week to start practicing the work before we have a phone consult. So she has the material, and she's going to start working on it, and we'll talk in about a week.
Cool. Awesome. Fabulous. Well, and of course that vitality meter can go up for several reasons. There's several things that can stimulate the increase in vitality. One of them, of course, is doing the right things in your life. The other is connecting in with some new level of support. And oftentimes what we'll find is that as people tap into and connect with a real support, then their vitality automatically goes up. And actually, it's sad in many relationships because that's not understood. People who on their own are at lower levels of vitality have those conflicting parts of themselves that when they're on their own, they can keep hidden. And as they get into real relationship and really connect, that can be extremely vitalizing. And of course, if you are vitalized and you've been in that dissociated state, you've been hiding something from yourself, all of a sudden things are in your face that otherwise you can keep hidden. And sadly, many relationships end at that point because the person says, well, I only experience this when I'm around you, so it must be your fault, as opposed to, oh, I'm having an experience in here. How do I tell it's in here? I'm feeling it. My mind is incoherent, as we read yesterday from David Bohm, physicist and neuropsychology person, that this sustained incoherence that the mind has is an internal process, and it's something we do to ourselves. And so what happens oftentimes in relationship is that we'll create these awesome connected spaces with someone, and all of a sudden get to look at what we never wanted to look at. And instead of, unfortunately, having the tools to help to move forward into a healing mode, one dumps and gets rid of the relationship because the thought is, oh, well, you know, this is your fault that I'm feeling this. Otherwise, you know, why is it going on now? And so it's unfortunate when people don't have the tools that occurs, and then, you know, break what's awesome in its potential as relationship. And so, sadly, that occurs. And as we read from David Bohm yesterday, and again, this is such powerful material. This gentleman is someone who worked with Einstein, probably one of the preeminent quantum physicists of all time. And he talks about how the challenge that we have, that thought gives us false information, and then we think that false information, because we're in denial, is all about somebody else. And, of course, it's never about anybody else. It's our own. And so he coined a term, sustained incoherence. I actually came across kind of an acute thing yesterday that is a result of this sustained incoherence that many people experience, and they move into, you know, one of the solutions we talk about in the codependence work is the non-being mind and some of its pseudo solutions. So there was recently a new element that was found. So a major research institution, I'll just read this, just recently announced the discovery of the heaviest element yet known to science. With an atomic mass of 312, this element has been tentatively named administratium. Administratium has one neutron, 12 assistant neutrons, 75 deputy neutrons, and 111 assistant deputy neutrons. These particles are held together by a force called morons, which is surrounded by a vast quantity of lepton-like particles called pions. Since administratium has no electrons, it is inert. However, it can be detected as it impedes every reaction with which it comes into contact. A minute amount of administratium causes one reaction to take 4 months, where otherwise it would normally take only a few minutes. Administratium has a normal half-life of 3 years. It does not decay, but instead undergoes a reorganization as assistant deputy neutrons exchange places and additional pions are added. In fact, administratium's mass will actually increase over time. Each reorganization causes some morons to become neutrons, forming new isotopes. This is formed whenever morons reach a certain quantity and concentration. A hypothetical quantity is referred to as critical morass. I thought that was kind of a cute expression of how this non-being mind tends to want to take over. And
where did you find that again?
Oh, somebody emailed it to me.
That's priceless.
Yeah,
I had to keep myself from laughing on top of you.
Yeah, I actually did some editing. I don't have the editing copy in front of me, but I did some editing, and I'll send you a copy of it. I'll get Jeannie to post it on the website. I thought it was kind of cute. And sadly, true, it's part of that sustained incoherent mind that just, you know, impedes everything, that gets in the way and thinks that survival means that it has to control whatever's happening in front of it. And so the healing process leads us back to functioning out of a coherent mind. And the coherent mind is the mind that comes from our true being, love, as opposed to the hostility and fear-based mind of sustained incoherence. And, of course, reality is what goes on between our ears. It's not what's happening out there in the world, but as Bohm so, you know, powerfully pointed out, that we don't understand that the thoughts that control us and keep us in that hostility and fear hold us in such a place of weakness and loss that life gets pretty crazy. So do we have anybody in the chat room or with any questions or thoughts or any callers?
Not at this time. Everybody's kind of listening. If anyone would like to ask Michael and Tim some questions, please call in at 646-200-4169 and make sure you push 1 so I know that you're wanting to speak with them. So, and if you have questions in the chat room, please just type them in and we'll be happy to get those to Michael.
So, David, have you ever run into Administratium anywhere in your travels through the world?
Wait a minute. No, never.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, this is new information for me. And I am being a little flippant. It is, you know, I was listening to...
Speaking, David, it's hard to understand you.
Okay, well, I'm at the same place. I have it off the speaker. Might just be a bad connection right now. Can you hear me any better now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. So I was saying I was listening to the show the other day that you and Tim were talking about the resistance and people and with everyone's resistance, and I think that's in alignment with what you're speaking about now. And the blockage of truth and all of those things come up for everyone that I know of. I know it's certainly come up with for me about even looking differently. As I see it, that even on my own, I won't recognize that. I think at the beginning, talking about when you guys were talking about the vitality meter, that things start to show up. I think there's also an element of it. A person's vitality may not be so much that then
David, you're cutting in and out. You're really hard to understand.
I'll see if I can find another place in the comments. Go ahead and
okay. Go
ahead to something else. See if I can find another place.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, well, you mentioned that blockage of truth, and it's such a common thing on our planet. And an easy way to spot blockage of truth is whenever I say to somebody, you made me, and I follow that with anything, happy, sad, whatever, angry, afraid, we're blocking the truth, that comes from our own sustained incoherence, that the hostility and fear-based mind is in this blockage space where it can't see that the motive to do whatever it's doing comes from internal conditions instead of external circumstances. You know, a lot of people, they have this wonderful, awesome relationship. It's just so fabulous. And then something like, you know, the situation you spoke of, Tim, where this woman was triggered, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I need to get out of here. There's something wrong with my partner. They're the problem in my life, and I'm out of here. And they have no idea that it comes from that incoherent condition in their own minds. It's not from the external circumstance. And the minute that we hook up through blockage of truth and language, we hook up some internal condition to an external circumstance, all of a sudden that external circumstance becomes unsolvable because it's not external. We've externalized it. We've pretended that it's out there, but it's an internal thing that's happening. And until we get clear that that's an internal situation, and we can create our relationships so that when any of us, and of course we've all got this sustained incoherence that Bohm talks about, when any of us have that come up, we could create relationships if we have the tools, and of course that's what our work is about. We could create relationships that support us moving through that state of sustained incoherence back to a sane mind, back to the true mind of being. And most people call what happens in their hostility and fear-based structure, they call it's resonating whatever content is there mind. You know, I'm sure that if this woman that you were speaking about that you spoke of yesterday and again a few minutes ago, I'm sure that if she's living in a standard world, in a standard place, you know, there's the problem isn't in her mind. The problem is somebody or something out there, and if only that could be changed, and that functioning of hostility and fear comes from our internal structure and is totally correctable if we have the tools and if we have the support for doing it. But most people just keep running. Hey, I'm out of here. I'm heading the other way.
Well, Michael, the comment I would make here is that somehow you've shifted to use this person who contacted me and a patient, you know, in 99 as the focus. And I would say everything you're talking about can be shifted directly over to me and explored
yes.
that way. All of this happened inside me on
right.
Friday and started locking up my physical system and my emotional system. And for the life of me, with all my tools, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out what I had done to throw my hip out or, you know, I was just cruising along. Life seems to be going pretty well in my current relationships and my health and my sons. And yet something shifted inside of me, and what was it? Something in this phone call triggered in me a deep fear of inadequacy, a fear that I hadn't done enough for her when I worked with her back from 89 through 99 or whatever it was, and then a fear that I might not be able to help her now. And it's not a rational fear. It's not based on a real threat to me physically or professionally or... And it doesn't even stand up to the logic of an evaluation of where she was back then and where she is now. She's made tremendous progress. She's doing beautifully
right.
well. All mm-hmm. of this fear about me not being enough and not helping her is my old fears of not being enough and not being able to help people or having done something wrong or being shamed or whatever it is.
Right.
And it's all an internal trigger with this one little outside event.
Right. And the fact that her life is moving along and going so well is part of her being empowered to allow her to look at the next level of what needs to come up. And, of course, in calling you, and obviously she got some pretty awesome support if the last layer of it was that long ago and you're the first thought in her mind to call you for support. Sounds like you did some pretty good work with her. But
yeah,
then, of course... Isn't it wonderful how we attract just the right people to show us what we need to look at?
Yeah, and I can't quite yet wrap my brain around the level of fear that got stirred up in me over the, you know, what is externally nothing but confirmation that I was doing good things and that she did good things and, you know, just a
right.
thing. There had to be awesome work that went on back then for her to think, oh, I know who to call. I'll call Tim.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I had an experience. I did share it earlier in the show, but it fits really well here. But about a week, 10 days ago, we did a workshop. Actually, I think it was it maybe Sunday? Yeah, I think we were in Miami and we were working at this center with several counselors and artists and people who are working with disadvantaged children. And it was just awesome, high energy. And I went home from that and I was just feeling so high and just in an awesome space. And the next morning when I woke up, I mean, you know, one of the things we talk about is that the human form is designed to function plugged into love, and that we're designed to experience the presence of love in every cell of our structure 24/7, 365. And the next morning when I woke up, I opened my eyes, and I was just stone cold disconnected. I mean... Where is the connectedness? Where is the love? Where is that energy? And actually, I didn't move into, I started to breathe. I didn't move into any specific thing that brought this forward. It was just there. And it was there so blatantly, I mean, just stone cold disconnected. Not a shred of love anywhere in my structure. It's like, what is this about? Went into breathing, and of course, one of the beauties of having a support person, you know, and someone who holds a space, was I was able to reach to Jeannie for support and get that energy moving in my structure again. I still, you know, I didn't come across, you know, anything specific. Nothing came up as I did about 2 hours of still point breathing and, you know, came out of it, reconnected and moved on. But it was kind of an interesting experience and one that I'd actually never had before that dramatically. So I certainly identify with that one, Kim. And this
Michael, we have a caller, too.
Oh, awesome. Please. Come on in now.
Okay, and this is Richard from New York. Hi, Richard.
Hey, how are you?
Hey there, young man.
How's it going, Michael?
Hey, it's rocking. How about you?
Good. I just wanted to tap into what Tim brought up about having somebody call back in and bringing up feelings of his feelings of, you know, what could he have done and all that stuff. I'm going through the same type of experience a number of years ago when I was working with as a somatic educator and whatnot. I happened to there was a person an acquaintance who was dying of Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS.
Right.
And he was one of those people that he had beat cancer before, and he was determined. He was a physicist. He was absolutely determined that he was going to beat this as well. And when he heard of the work that I did because of the neuromuscular repatterning and stuff like that type of work, he was absolutely convinced that it was going to work for him. And I knew that the work probably wouldn't. The best it could do is possibly delay the, you know, eventual, you know, problem.
Right.
But it wouldn't cure him of it, and I didn't know how to tell it to him. And the best I could do was say to him, "Look, all I can say is try it and see what happens. But I don't want you to get your hopes up too high, you know, about just being your cure-all." And so he did learn the exercises, did some stuff, and, you know, it obviously wasn't his cure-all. He eventually died of the disease. What's coming up for me is yesterday, I ran into someone, and they wanted to know about what I did, and I was telling them. They said, "Well, I have a friend who's just been diagnosed with ALS, and she wanted to know whether this work would benefit them." It's like, okay, here we go again. What am I going to say to this person?
Amen.
And so, I guess, at this point, you know, I don't want to discourage the person again by telling them that, hey, look, this isn't going to cure you. This isn't going to, you know, the best I could. Again, I told the person that I was talking to is, hey, if anything else, it'll help her maintain control over her system a lot longer than what it would be if she didn't do anything else. So that's basically what I tell people. So I was wondering what maybe your input at this point would be from how I might talk about this with someone, or your feedback about this particular disease.
Well, my first thought would be that you might want to do some worksheets around, you know, what it brought up for you, and come to a session with someone with a clearer mind, a more powerful, connected space of love. Because what I know is there are no incurable diseases. There are incurable people. There are people who don't choose to move through things. And, you know, I've seen people move through I've never specifically worked with anybody with ALS, but I've seen people move through some pretty heavy-duty things, cancer and such, and come out the other side, you know, doing just fine. But it's not about me fixing them. It's about supporting them and doing their work. At what level is somebody willing to do their work and to move through what they need to move through? And so I don't think that you can have somebody whose hopes get too high. I think that that state of hope gives us a way to connect to another level that can empower the healing process. And, of course, you can't say, yes, you're going to get that exact result, but I would encourage someone in that posture to also begin to do the forgiveness work, to look at what are the issues that they're carrying around. You know, as Tim pointed out, you know, he starts to think these thoughts and all of a sudden his hip is out of place. We listened to the physicist, David Bohm. Were you on the show yesterday when I quoted him?
Unfortunately, I wasn't available yesterday to listen to the show, so I missed it.
Well, let me just read this again, because it's something we'll probably read repeatedly to really get the idea. But here's this physicist who's worked with Einstein. I mean, just his rap sheet is amazing. And
David Bohm, the one that was in Brazil, right? That moved to Brazil or moved out. He was forced out of the country and moved to South America.
He was forced out of the country, yes, and the McCarthyism got him. But he eventually came back and worked with Carl Pribram, who's a premium neuroscientist. I mean, just did some amazing stuff in many different areas. But here's what he says. He says the generally accepted assumption in thought is that it's just telling you the way things are and that it's not doing anything, that you are inside there deciding what to do with the information. But you don't decide what to do with the information. Thought runs you. Thought, however, gives false information that you are running it and you're the one who controls thought. Whereas actually thought is the one which controls each one of us. And here I take it that he's referring to what goes on in what we call the body's mind, and that there's another level of mind if we bring to bear the actual human life that we have. There's an actual mind there rather than one that just replicates the same old thought structures of the generations. And that if we're in captivity, I would you know, correlate what he's saying here to the captivity that was spoken about in ancient times, and that if we're in captivity to what's going on in this carbon-based memory system, then we can't get outside of its game. But when we wake up to the actual human life that we have, there's another mind. So he goes on to, anyway, what Bohm goes on to say is, whereas actually thought is the one that controls each one of us, thought is creating divisions out of itself and then saying that those divisions are there naturally. There's another major feature of thought. Thought doesn't know it is doing something and then it struggles against what it's doing. In other words, we've got an unconscious dynamic going on. It doesn't want to show, pardon me, doesn't want to know that it is doing it. And thought struggles against results, trying to avoid the unpleasant results while keeping on with that way of thinking. And so he calls it sustained incoherence. And he goes on to speak about how that becomes an impact in the body. And so my invitation to anyone who's got anything going on in their lives, whether it's a financial disease, a relationship disease, a physical disease, an emotional disease, a mental disease, is to recognize what's running them, what they're in captivity to, which is usually an old family pattern. It's been going on for generations. You know, you listen to that story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, making what should have been a two-week journey. And what they said was, in order to get out of that captivity or out of that desert, once they got out of captivity, to get out of the unconsciousness or the desert, what they said was the old generation had to die off. And it's forgiveness that allows us to get rid of. They weren't talking about everybody in old physical bodies. They were talking about the root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. The old causes had to go. And if we don't wake up to that new level of being, which is our original created essence, love, and function out of that mind, then we really don't have a mind. We have what I'm beginning to refer to as a replicate mind, that is one that just replicates whatever's gone on in the past. And that replicate mind carries at its root a state of what Bohm calls sustained incoherence. So Bohm goes on to say, so one begins to wonder what is going to happen to the human race. Technology keeps advancing with greater and greater power for good or for destruction. What is the source of all this trouble? I'm saying that the source is basically in thought. Now, many people would think that such a statement is crazy, he says, because thought is the one thing we have with which to solve our problems. That's part of our tradition. Yet it looks as if the things we solve are used to solve our problems is the source of our problems. So you'll hear me oftentimes say in the workshops, in order to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. You've got to get out of this carbon-based memory system with its sustained incoherence. And so when disease process shows up, whatever level it's on, it's as a result of this sustained incoherence. There was this guy 2,000 years ago who knew exactly how to correct that. And he gave us a major tool. It's called forgiveness. And when we can touch into that level, that is cause in physiology, we can remove what never belonged. And the tissue structure will automatically go back to a healed condition. If the sustained incoherence, as Bohm calls it, remains in the tissue structure, then the tissue structure is going to degrade, degenerate, and ultimately it kills us. And we're all hanging out with this death sentence. Why? Because we have this that we refuse to face. If you go back into the ancient scriptures, they said, with man, death began. Now, I can't be responsible for whether you or anybody else does their work. You can't be responsible if someone with ALS or any other disease does their inner work, but you can certainly point them the way, offer them the tools and the support. You know, my choice with this work is I'm committed to being here for eternity. I'm here to shepherd this work through to the completion of the project, to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So I anticipate being doing this 2,000 years from now, 500 years from now, 75 years from now, I'm going to be doing exactly what I'm doing. Now, will I actually break through all of my own sustained incoherence and be able to do that? I don't know. I'm working at it, but whether I'm able to do it or not is irrelevant. You know, if I don't get in touch with every unconscious dynamic in me, is one of them going to get me? Well, it could. But I'm doing everything I can do to work forward and to develop the understanding for moving through those states so that we can reclaim what we originally came here for. And that is an awesome life filled with the active presence of love and interacting in communities with people who function out of that state. And, of course, each time somebody with sustained incoherence comes into that support space, they go crazy. Up comes all the stuff that they've never dealt with. And, you know, it's kind of interesting in intensives. You'll get a taste of this when you're there, Richard, and Tim's been there, David's been there. But one of the requests that we'll make the first day or so of the workshop is that everyone make a commitment to be in every session through the whole workshop, that they don't leave the room for anything, that there's no side talking, because that's just a way of leaving. And the reason we ask that is because over the years, what we've noticed is that the very instant, I mean literally to the second, that somebody's about to come across that which would bring up that sustained incoherence, that part of their mind that they need to heal, literally to the second, their minds will give them an excuse to leave the room. I actually did a workshop series out in Oregon. We finished there about a week ago, and there was one night there was a woman who was sitting up at the front of the room, and she asked a question, which was a pretty important question to her, and it was right on track with where the workshop was going, so I turned my attention to her, and I start to answer her question. And she literally put down her papers and turned and walked out of the room, got up out of her seat and walked out of the room. I said, "Where are you going? You just asked a question." oh, okay. And she came back and sat down. But it's just amazing to watch how this mind, when this non-being mind, this replicant mind that we call what we think with, and there's no thinking that happens. You know, I use an example. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, what happens? And most everybody says, well, now I'm thinking about the color of my car. It's like, no, you're not. I just spoke words that resonated some brain cells. Those brain cells fired. That's got nothing to do with thinking. But we call this function of moving information around out of this state of sustained incoherence, we call it thinking, and it's not. We need to introduce the thinker again. And the thinker is a being that's made of this stuff called love. The thinker has a mind, has an ability to do something with that sustained incoherence, that from within that state of sustained incoherence, it can't be done. And so that's what we're looking to support people in. And I just came across this stuff in poems the other day, and it's like he's just so powerfully expressed what we've been doing for 40 years. So it's, you know, whether one person or another, or even ourselves, makes all the breakthroughs that are necessary, we can't be responsible, and we can't do anything other than give someone the tools and support them moving through whatever they're ready to move through. You know, a lot of people with the situation that Tim just went through, that he shared with us with his hip and all, would just be, well, I'm off to the doctor, I'll just get some painkillers, and I'll just hope it'll go away. Rather than, oh, what's going on inside of me that I need to deal with here? You know, I mean, that's an awesome shift in our culture to do that.
No, I understand that perfectly, and
a little louder, if you would.
I said I understand what you're saying perfectly. That, you know, when some sort of pain comes up in our lives, that rather than medicating it right away, we actually delve in and ask what's going on inside ourselves. That's perfectly. I understand that real well, it's interesting because I'm sitting having coffee with a person who's, sort of a very negative person. He's always in complaining about this and that, and did you hear what the water company did this week? You know, what they did to this, about this and that, and he's always, you know, and we eventually got talking about, Social Security, Medicare, and all that stuff, and he was talking about the medications and all that stuff, and how his mother had been on blood pressure medicine and all that stuff. And I said, well, I'll be honest with you, I personally don't want to get trapped in that medication syndrome, because you start on one thing, and the next thing you know, they got you another. You know, they keep adding on top of stuff, and they really don't know what's all the interactions that are occurring, and they just keep piling things on top.
Right.
And who's paying for it? You know, who's paying for all this stuff? I said, I'll personally decide that I'll stay off medication as long as I can. And if I die because I didn't have medication, so be it. You know,
I've
gone through that situation with my own physician, who wanted to give me statin drugs for cholesterol. And, you know, I told him, I said, I don't want to go that route. You know, I've seen the complications of it, you know, and I said, I really don't want to go that route. I said, I'd rather stay in the situation I'm in. He said, well, he tried to sort of the guilt trip me about saying, well, I don't want to be responsible for you dying. If I hear you have a heart attack tomorrow, I don't want to be responsible. I said, don't worry about it. I'm not going to hold you responsible for me dying if I have a heart attack.
Right. Well, one of the things I might suggest, Richard, is before you come out, get your cholesterol checked so you know exactly what it is before you get to Heartland, and then have it checked immediately afterward. And then, if you would, feedback the results, because you're going to see a difference, I suspect. Many people do.
Okay.
Actually, Jeannie, when I first met her, she was on medication for cholesterol problems, and 3 months later, her cholesterol was down below normal, when she started doing this work and started doing her dietary regimen differently. It just totally turned around.
All right.
And, you know, the person who wants to talk about their medication, we call them organ recitals, you know, who had the last organ removed, who had the next one. And people can be threatened if you try to take that away from them, because in many cases it's almost like it's their identity. And so
right.
We invite people to give up that identity and identify yourself as the awesome presence of love, learning to work through everything in you that's less than love so that you can function as the human is designed to function. You know, a lot of people get focused on the idea of, well, have you been saved? And, you know, that sort of a game. And what we suggest is, why don't you look at your original function? See what the Creator had in mind for you from the beginning. Why don't you go for that instead of that other focus? And as you go for what you were created for, all of a sudden you plug back in and everything starts to function on better and better levels. And that's what we're here to support people in doing. And, of course, our relationships give us the opportunities. And here we are with those opportunities. And it's an awesome gift to have. So cool. Thank you for your call. And you know, I'd suggest you maybe introduce that person to Worksheets. They can just jump in. Anybody that's on the show who hasn't been introduced to the Reality Management Worksheet, we suggest that you go to www.whyagain.com. And on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says Download Worksheets. And the first three links are all information about doing the worksheet process. There's a chapter 24 from my book. You can download, of course, free. You can download the whole book, too. But at that link, there's chapter 24 that explains the how-to and the why of forgiveness. Then the second link is the worksheet itself. And the third link is a radio show from back in February where we had someone that we walked through a worksheet step by step. So you've got a sample of those instructions. So it might be useful and an adjunct to what else you're doing. I know that when we were out in Las Vegas, we actually had traveled there twice during this season, which is we've never done that before. We were there back in November for several weeks supporting a physician and training his medical assistants to do worksheets. And he's writing scripts for people to do worksheets. You need to do some forgiveness work. And actually, when he introduced us to his medical assistants, he's involved in six different offices, and he had 20 medical assistants there. When he introduced us, he said, I can give people pills forever. It's not going to heal anything. He said, and he's been doing this work for 13 years. He said, this is the only thing I know that actually heals. And so to tap people in, and where will somebody go with it? I've seen people do the most amazing turnarounds and things with this work. And I've seen other people who say they're doing it, but, you know, hang out with the same old resentments, the same old hostilities, always finding somebody else to blame for it. And so the goal, one of the prime goals, is responsibility. And then awakening to the true mind that we were given in our creation, the mind that comes from this awesome presence and state of love, rather than the database that passes for the mind. Yesterday, I also quoted Einstein in terms of this, and he speaks about the two minds, and one of them he calls the intuitive mind. That would be the mind that comes from being, and the other one he calls rational mind. So here's what Einstein says. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We've created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. In other words, everybody's living in this state of sustained incoherence that has been developed and refined, you know, almost into a science for 1,000 generations. People living without the active presence of love in their structures, doing all sorts of crazy things, and then passing on those patterns of thought in their genetics. And, you know, bring people in saying, well, you know, this is life. This is the way it goes. And it's not the way it's designed to go. It's designed to go in a whole different direction. Bohm goes on, you know, and part of his statement is his thought has been constantly evolving, and we can't say when that structure began. But with the growth of civilization, it has developed a great deal. It was probably very simple thought before civilization, and now it has become very complex and ramified as much more incoherent than before. Now I say this system has a fault in it, a systemic fault. It is not a fault here, there, or here, but it is a fault all throughout the system. He says, can you picture that? It's everywhere and nowhere. The system not only includes felts, he refers to feeling as felts and feelings, but it includes the state of the body. You know, it reflects as our physiology. It includes the whole society. You may say, I see a problem here, so I will bring my thoughts to bear on this problem. But my thought is part of the system. It has the same fault as the fault I'm trying to look at, or a similar fault. Thought is constantly creating problems that way and then trying to solve them. But as he tries to solve them, it makes it worse because it doesn't notice that it's creating them. And the more it thinks, the more problems it creates. And until we go back to our true mind, that's just kind of the state of the union. You know, I've actually considered suggesting that that we create a 51st state, and the 51st state would be confusion. And maybe a 52nd state, hostility and fear, because so many people just live there. And that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them, because we, you know, I'm talking about all of us, you know, every one of us has this, because it's been in development for so long. But every one of us can clean it up, and we can create a support system, and our goal is to take the tools, to teach the tools. We invite everybody. Load that worksheet. Put the pen to the paper and watch what you break through. You know, every time somebody does a worksheet effectively, what happens is they learn something about themselves they didn't know, something that they had dissociated from. And when we're in that dissociated state, we hide from ourselves that incoherence. And, you know, if you look at our culture, our whole culture's language is all about how they made me. They made me sad, they made me afraid, they made me this, they made me that. Which means that I'm totally dissociated from all of my own incoherence. And I think it's everybody else's fault. No wonder there's no correction. Our whole language is based on the denial of that and pretending that it's about somebody else. It's just, it takes a huge, huge level of motivation and the tools to do it. And the tools have been virtually disappeared. If you look at the tools that were developed 2,000 years ago by the man named Yeshua, in his native Aramaic language, they are so awesome. But then you take a mind with this sustained incoherence that goes and looks at those tools and says, ah, here's this guy who says the first law is to love the creator, neighbor, and self, and that's the basis of his work. In other words, you got to develop a mind without this incoherence. And so the sustained incoherent mind, or what we're going to call the replicant mind, looks at those teachings, and it replicates its sustained incoherence. So it looks and it says, ah, okay, you tell me the creator is love. All right, I got it. The creator is love. Now, let's go fear love. And its thought system creates more insanity. And it's not until, you know, one of the skills to develop, if you're ever going to heal this, is to become the thinker apart from your own thoughts, the feeler apart from your feelings, the actor apart from your actions. When you can step back from what this non-being mind, this mind that comes from the functioning of the cells of the body, and start to observe it and start to crack its codes, you undo this state of sustained incoherence. And life just becomes a whole different project. And we're here to support everybody with this different project, the actual experience, 24/7, 365 of the presence of love. What an awesome place to be in. And Carol, do we have any other callers or any comments in the chat room? I know we've just got a few minutes left. This has been, it seems like these hours are going by so much faster the last week or so. I don't know what happened.
They do go by fast. Now everybody's just kind of listening and just being quiet. I guess they're all doing their worksheets.
Awesome. Well, if you have a question on those worksheets, we'd love to hear your question. And the number that you can call in on is 646 200 4169. We have time for one really good juicy question. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes. And so one juicy question would be awesome. 646-200-4169. And if you call, just hit one on the phone, and then Carol will know. Jeannie actually, she's been helping her son move, and yesterday she was cleaning a space to put some stuff that they'd moved, and fell off a stool, just a little, you know, 2-foot stool, and kind of racked her foot up. So if you'd all hold the space for her, she's actually gone to get her foot x-rayed to make sure it's all in one piece. I think she just sprained it. I don't think there's anything broken. But if everybody would just hold that space and send her a little love, that would be helpful for her, I'm sure. And but if we've got a question, please jump on board.
Michael, I want to remind you that yesterday Sam was sharing something rather intense that came up for her in the exercise. So since she wasn't on today, if you could, if you have her contact information, maybe you can let her know we're thinking about her and
yes,
and invite her to get on tomorrow. And but she
I'll give her a call when we get off the show.
Okay. Somebody in the chat room just asked, I would like to know about the significance of dreams.
Dreams. Well, you know, dreams can come from two different places. They can come from this, what we're going to call from now on the replicant mind, or what we might call the mind of the body. You know, again, if I say don't think about the color of your car, brain cells fire, that's content. One of the examples I use in the codependence workshop to speak about how that works is this woman who was brought up in church. I mean, she was in church from the time she was a newborn, and every time the church doors were open, I mean, she shared with me that she could be in the toilet puking her guts out sick, and Mom would be standing holding the front door open calling, "Come on, honey, it's time for church. We're going to be late." And so you can imagine a child who's brought up in that church environment where every child's supposed to be seen and not heard, how many times it would have its sleeve or its arm grabbed and told to shush, you know. Actually, along with that, I've had several people that have shared this story how, oh, what used to happen to them in church if they made a sound was they got pinched. So let's be in this place where we're about the love of God, and, yeah, let's pinch kids and, you know, like, hello. How about if we just made a space of love for a child to be a child? And, you know, if they're being so disruptive that it doesn't work, okay, well, let's have a space for them to go rather than being abusive of them. But anyway, she's been, of course, 1,000 times had her sleeve grabbed or her arm grabbed and told to shush. So here she is 50 years later. She's now 50 years of age, and she's in bed with her husband sleeping. And it's early morning, and he reaches over, and he puts his arm around her and touches her wrist. And so a physical stimulus like that can cause the content of that tissue to start to fire. The mind functions through every cell in the body or the energy system. This state of sustained incoherence is throughout this whole thought system, as Bohm says. And so he touches her wrist, and all of a sudden she's in a dream. And in the dream, she's a child, she's back in church, and her sleeve is being tugged on, and she's being told to shush. So her mind plays out a vignette, a set of pictures. And those pictures are her dream. There's one place the dream can come from. The other is it can come from being. If we've got our intuitive faculties, our higher faculties operating, as Einstein speaks of, and he said his work was 90% intuition, 10% intellect. And so the dream can come from that space where we get guidance and we're told what's happening on an energetic level throughout our universe and throughout our world. If that addresses the question in an adequate way, awesome. If it doesn't quite do that, I'd invite you to call in tomorrow and ask the question, and we'll have a little more conversation about dreams. Other than that, thanks for being here. Do your work. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. We're complete, Carol, if you want to push that button.
All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.yagain.com. That's www.yagain.com. Continuously.